your host, Jeff Ragavan, and welcome to the Alchemy Podcast, where we're on a quest to explore the intersection of cannabis, compliance, and creative in the marketing world today and beyond.
I'm joined with the amazing Leah Heiss, president of Gemini Twin Consulting. Leah, it's awesome to have you on the show.
Jeff, it's so exciting to be here. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So, you're just kind of, doing so many different things. And I thought this would be a really good treat for a lot of the folks that are listening to the show. But, you know, for those who don't know Leah, pretty amazing career, you know, started off as an attorney to the chief admin judge in the U.S. Coast Guard and really, you know, focusing on environmental issues. And then in 2016, you know, became the CEO of Women Grow, a women's-based cannabis networking and empowerment group. And then from there led, you know, two different cannabis companies to go public, Forefront Ventures, which she was the chief compliance officer, which also went public in 2019. And then Ascend Wellness Holdings as the chief administrative officer. And Leah really helped them go public earlier this year. So, you know, really went from the foundation to IPO in less than 3 years, which was amazing. And, you know, Leah, you do so many different things, but, you know, I think kick us off and just, I think it's just kind of interesting, you know, one, working at the Coast Guard, how did that happen? And then two, how did you go from there to the cannabis space?
I think it is a story of unplanned journeys. When I went to law school way back in 1992, I really thought I was going to be an entertainment attorney, and I was fascinated with entertainment law, and I wanted to help musicians get record deals and things like that. And my father is an environmentalist, and he had worked for the National Oceanic Atmospheric Administration early on in the creation of the agency in the 70s. And like most things in life, you go where your connections are. So he connected me to the administrative law judge at NOAA while I was in law school, and I became a law clerk for him, and then just followed those series of cases over to the Coast Guard, which was an incredible time in my life. I learned a lot. I had the blessing to work for a chief administrative law judge that had this vision to create really an agency that would do consolidation of cases across the government. Mm-hmm. So his concept was not only to hear Coast Guard cases, which were oil pollution, suspension of merchant mariners licenses, but to also start taking cases from other agencies where maybe they didn't have a strong administrative judge core, like NOAA, the Department of Labor, Patent and Trademark Office, things like that. And so what we did was we took all of the regulations that were these agencies were operating under, and we workflowed them. And then we worked with a group out of Latvia to create the first paperless office system in the federal government.
Amazing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was really interested in that just because two things. I'm a serious boater. And I went to school to be a meteorologist. So I've been kind of, you know, fascinated with NOAA for many years.
The Weather Service in NOAA.
Yeah, reading that about you, I'm like, oh my God, so interesting, just kind of my connections into, you know, atmospheric sciences and marine life, and then obviously both of our connections in cannabis. So it was just like, wow, we've kind of similar, you know, adjacent paths, if you will, as far as interests and stuff. So I thought that was really cool.
That is interesting.
And so then you were the CEO at Women Grow, right? And so I imagine you're connected with some really fascinating people and, you know, drove incredible momentum, especially for women in cannabis during your time there.
I was truly blessed to be able to get to lead Women Grow for even the short period of time that I did, which was just 9 months. And it was founded by two women that had a vision for allowing females to have a larger space in the cannabis industry. And it was supported by a group of cannabis veterans, female cannabis veterans out of Denver, and in the Colorado area, Jamie Lewis, Jennifer Murray, Meg Sanders, people who are still incredibly active in this industry, and just are the true pioneers. And just by being part of that organization, I was blessed to have so many deep contacts within the cannabis industry and friends and supporters to really lean on when you can't figure out your way.
Sure. So, you know, I think also just kind of looking at, you know, two of the organizations that, you know, you were working in, especially in the C-suite, you know, two main operators, you've got, you know, Forefront Ventures and Ascend Wellness. And, you know, the two things in common is you help both of those companies go public. And so I think there's a lot of people that listen to this show, you know, that are either preparing to go public, that are working through an IPO, that, you know, might be thinking about going public in the future. You know, it would be helpful just to hear from you, especially since you've done this now, not once, but twice, you know, some of the roadblocks that maybe you encountered the first time around and what you really learned from them.
I think, you know, not necessarily the process of going public itself, the actual filing of the documents, the S-1s, those types of things, which are complex and take a lot of teamwork, but the genesis and creation of the companies themselves. How long it takes to take a cannabis company, Forefront, for example, which took a little bit longer to get to the IPO point, just because they were figuring it out along the way and what their assets were and building out the team that they needed to take it public, in comparison to Ascend that had a pretty clear vision when they started. The first employee at Ascend was only hired in February of 2019 and went public less than 24 months later. That was driven by very strategic decisions in terms of the assets that were acquired, very strategic hires, the creation of a strong management team. Ultimately, taking any company public is all about the team and making sure that you're building the team that's working together to be able to create a company that scales. Mm-hmm. And in this industry, creating a scalable company is very difficult because you're, as you know, working for Philo, we operate under so many different regulations, both from the federal side that people don't really think about, but also just the generalized cannabis regulations. And it's a complex patchwork quilt of trying to figure it all out, but that's what makes it fun.
Mm-hmm. Now, you were, until recently at Ascend, you were essentially the chief administrative officer. I don't hear that role often. So talk to us a little bit about, you know, what did it entail? And, you know, I think also like taking a company from, you know, kind of like a seed to IPO in less than 3 years is pretty wild. So talk to us a little bit about, you know, the experience there as well.
Yeah, so I've never been a part of a company that moved as fast as Ascend. They had an incredible capacity to identify an asset, a target, acquire it, get the capital to do it. I mean, just the ability of the CEO to raise capital is amazing. Mm-hmm. And his co-founder, Frank Perullo, the chief strategic officer, has an incredible ability to identify, you know, assets and acquisitions to target. That speed to market required a lot of push and a lot of teamwork to get there. None of this happens by itself. Mm-hmm. And my role at Ascend was initially I came in to be chief compliance officer, and the COO at that time had parted very early on in the company, and we needed to have some administrative focus on the company. So what I oversaw was at the admin side of the house, the legal department, the compliance department, and the human resources department. Because scaling any of these companies, it's all based on people. So if you don't have a system to bring people in and through your company, onboard them, train them, make sure they understand what their roles or functions are, then you're going to have a problem. And then you also need to have a strong compliance ethos and an understanding of it's an elephant, right? And you're biting it one piece at a time. But how are you going to have replicable processes from state to state, from store to store, from shop to shop, from grow to grow, so that you can consistently manage it as a holistic entity?
Mm. Now, I think from just kind of looking at your various positions outside of Ascend as well, like at Forefront Ventures, you also had oversight of compliance. So, you know,
and I also did HR for them early
amongst
on.
Other things as well. Mm-hmm. Right? So, you know, I think you know this, and you know, obviously, a ton of clients that we work with on the compliance side, you know, they are really juggling how to deal with the ever-changing legal landscape and really ensuring that their companies stay compliant. And so, you know, how did you really? What was your main kind of go-to for staying compliant? Like, how did you really juggle all of that change, the changes on the, you know, the state and the local level?
It is really, really tough. And again, it goes back to the team. And it is also why having systems in place like Philo, like Canaregs, like their Power DMS, we need more of these types of technologies in our companies and inside of this universe of cannabis in order to identify where the holes are in compliance, have SOPs, create workflows, make sure that you're operating in a QA, QC, and compliance type mentality and returning that back. Oftentimes inside of any of these companies, it's difficult to allocate resources to compliance because it's a cost center. It's not necessarily driving ROI, even though when you think about it, the entirety of these businesses are based on the licenses that you acquire from the state. Mm-hmm. And if you are not compliant, those licenses go away. So ultimately, the licenses themselves are your entire ROI. And if you aren't preserving them and you're not focused on preserving them, you may pass now, but down the road, they will start taking these licenses away. They will.
Mm. Good to know. So kind of looking back a little bit on your experience, you know, when you kind of look back, you had obviously two, you know, public companies, you know, and you also obviously worked, you know, in the networking space as well for cannabis. But when you think back of like your most rewarding accomplishment in the sector, which one would it be? I mean, obviously you've done some great stuff all around, but if you can really say, you know, this has been the most rewarding.
Gosh, that's a really hard one because I think some of my most rewarding things that I've done have been outside of even those three opportunities. It's getting out and networking with people who are just getting into the cannabis industry and watching them grow their business from seed to IPO, helping them, guiding them, getting a product to market. There's so many companies in this industry, both plant touching and ancillary, that are going to be the true game changers as this industry matures. And I find giving back to those early stage startups to be really the most valuable for me.
Makes sense. So, you know, when you think about kind of the future, right? So you now, obviously, you're president of Gemini Twin Consulting. You know, what is your, talk to us a little bit about your focus now. You kind of now have the tailwinds behind you. You're now starting your own thing. Like, what is the focus of your new firm?
Sure. So ultimately, it will be helping people scale their businesses. One will be Safe Arbor, which is a company that I have been advising for a few years. It's a female company out of Nevada that is bringing a delivery solution to the cannabis industry, where they have entered into a contract with the company that creates Amazon lockers. And this will allow the consumer to purchase directly at the locker.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. And it's all connected to seed to sale. It's 100% compliant. So we are working on getting that to market, and that will go to market this year. So that's one of the big areas that I'm focusing on. My specialty is taking that big picture vision of whatever a founder may have and breaking it down into the little steps it takes to get an actual company to support that scale. That's just the way my mind works.
Got it. And so, you know, you've obviously met a ton of people in the space, you know, not just from, you know, the networking business, but also just kind of through, you know, the cannabis operators and whatnot. But I'm just curious from you, like, who was, in your eyes, who was the most interesting person that you've met while working in the space?
Wow, the most interesting person I've met. I mean, every person I've met has taught me something in this industry. Before I went into Ascend, for example, I had not been exposed heavily to that finance side of the world. And Ascend is a very finance-driven company. And that taught me so much. Abner, the CEO, Frank Perullo, the Chief Strategic Officer, Dan Neville, the CFO, the way that they think about this industry is very different than the way that Forefront thought about the industry. And Forefront came from more of a social policy aspect. And that's something that I align with very well. And numbers have always been something that kind of scared me, which is why I went to law school. But I learned so much during all of those journeys that I don't know that I could identify one particular person that's the most amazing person. I've had the opportunity to meet lots of people. Jim Belushi.
Love Jim.
Yeah, he's a great guy.
We had Jim on the show as well.
Oh, he's, you know, he's a great, just a great guy. And
so awesome.
I mean, I was totally fangirling when I got to meet Stephen D'Angelo. It just, there's so
Stephen
many
on the show also. You're amongst these amazing peers, by the way. We've had all of their voices on. It's so great.
It is very humbling to be in a group of people that have been on the show. You know, Pete Cadence is just absolutely brilliant and really philanthropic. And I love not only the MSO that he's built, but just his ethos around social equity and the need to use this plant to do good, to create a safe place for our employees, to give back to the very communities that have been underserved. It's something I'm very passionate about.
Yeah, Pete, Pete was on last week on the mm-hmm. show. And yeah, he's a great guy. And he's, by the way, he's also a big boater. Loves being on the water.
I heard he ran his boat aground.
Yeah. On the show. I told him after, I'm like, you got to check out Qualified Captain on Instagram. I don't know if you've seen that, Leah.
I haven't.
Oh my God, you got to check it out. It's one train wreck after another.
Oh, I at the Coast Guard saw many.
Well, listen, this was awesome having you on, and, you know, congrats on obviously all of the, you know, great moments so far in your career, and obviously so many things ahead. And, you know, thanks for taking a little bit of time and coming on Alchemy.
Thanks so much. I appreciate you having me.
Awesome.
This episode of the Alchemy Podcast was brought to you by Philo. Thanks for tuning in. And if you enjoyed today's show, don't forget to subscribe and share.